Welcome to Let's Talk Real Estate. I'm your host, Anna Olcisi, entrepreneur, realtor, and travel lover. Here's where I get to combine all of my passions into one and chat with guests worldwide about all things real estate. Join us for lighthearted banter, useful information, and the occasional outrageous anecdote. Welcome to Let's Talk Real Estate. Today we have one of our regular guests who is fantastic, Dan Coffey of Ameris Bank, and he's here to talk to us about very important things for future homeowners who are thinking about saving some money, maybe too much. Yes, there is such a thing as maybe saving too much to buy a house, and why it's important sometimes to pursue alternative routes that many people don't even think about. So Dan, welcome. Thank you so much.
I always enjoy these talks.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, me too. I always learn a lot.
Honestly, I think I texted you. I learned more from you in these things than you from me.
Well, thank you. Okay, Dan, so we were emailing before this, and I asked you, what are some questions that you get from
First-time buyers,
yeah. Exactly, and people who are just looking right now to buy, and a lot of them have asked, what do we do to prepare for a future purchase?
Yeah,
what's some advice that you can give them, because a lot of people right now are renting and they are looking to maybe save up for a future purchase.
Basically, two types of questions. I get questions from folks who have just visited an open house, mm-hmm. and they want to know whether they can pre-qualify. Excuse me. And then I have another set of questions from folks who are in a rental. They're going to be there for 6 to 8 months. And there are some commonalities in that. But the people who are looking forward, I really love to talk to the folks who are doing their homework. Because what they're trying to do is figure out, when the time comes, 6 months from now, what do I need to do to prepare?
Right.
And it's just terribly smart beforehand, because we're dealing with areas that they've never dealt with before. There's an awful lot of information that's not necessarily precise out there. I have seen purchases delayed because of well-intentioned, but not appropriate, in my opinion, advice. Uh-huh. We were talking about, I've actually worked with any number of folks who said, I have to wait till I put 20% down.
Right.
And almost without variance, when I ask them where they heard that, they'll say their parents.
Yep.
And it's terribly well-intentioned, but there's a reality to this waiting process. And I actually, I'm a numbers geek, and I love to try to put a pencil to some of these things. And I was talking with a young couple, and they could put 10% down on a property that was $300,000. Mm-hmm. So they were prepared to put $15,000 down, or pardon me, $30,000. Mm-hmm. They said they could save $500 a month toward putting 20% down. And all this is to avoid PMI, which we can talk about.
And PMI is?
Private mortgage insurance.
Exactly.
And I'd love to talk about that. But
we will.
And I did some inference. I inferred that the money that they, instead of putting the money down, they put it in the bank. Mm-hmm. And that every year there's another $6,000 in that account. And I inferred that they got 4% on that.
Right.
I then took the house of $300,000, and I assumed 3.5% a year escalation, appreciation, just 3.5% a year, and that is not out of the norm.
No, not at all.
And it ended up that it took 6 years for them to actually accumulate, with the additional $500 a month and the interest on that, to finally be able to put the 20% down that they felt that they needed to. And the property was valued at $364,000 at that point. And when they put the 20% down, the loan amount was actually higher than it would have been if they'd put down 10% now and simply bought it. And then the appreciation numbers are just outstanding. There's real estate is the place you get the best leverage for your investment. Plus, it's a home.
Right.
But that is one of those things that everybody knows you need to put 20% down that is just so wrong.
Yeah.
And I think part of that is, again, it's well-intentioned, and typically it comes from folks, I'm older, but older
folks. maybe folks closer to my age.
There you go. There's a, there was in the past, private mortgage insurance. Let me launch into that. PMI was created in 1957. And all it, what they were doing was copying FHA. What FHA did for the home buying and creating a middle class was just outstanding. It was 1934. And they decided, rather than people putting 50% down, which is a lot of what they had to do back in the 30s, they said, we need to create a mechanism where the lenders protected, because the lenders were asking that much down because they were worried about foreclosure losses.
Sure.
1934, FHA. It allowed borrowers to put 3.5% down. Now, this is unheard of. But the way they were able to do that was that the government created mortgage insurance. The whole concept of insuring the lender against losses. And what 20 years of that proved was that people who put 3.5% down were just as likely to make their payment. They wanted that house. They were not going to lose the house. They were going to make their payments. So 20-some years later, 1957, a company out of Milwaukee called MGIC, Mortgage Guarantee, we called it MAGIC back in the day, they convinced the primary investor, which was Fannie Mae, that they could insure a conventional loan. It was never been done before. And over the years, they basically established a cost for that. In mortgage banking, risk is cost is a function of risk. So they basically categorized 5% down, 10% down, and 15% down.
Okay.
In terms of the risk levels. And they had a different cost for each of those, regardless of how good your credit was, or it was just completely loan to value.
Okay.
How much of the percentage of the value of the property are you putting down? And the standard for years, and I'm going to say 25, 30 years, I'm not going to use a factor here. The factor that they used, if I applied it to a $300,000 loan, would be $195 a month. That's what it would be in order to get that $300,000 property.
Right.
In the last 6 years, PMI has become credit score driven.
Oh, okay.
Completely. It's completely tiered based upon your credit score.
Oh.
I just 2 days ago had a young couple, and they have very good credit in the 760s. Well, the cost for that $300,000 loan, rather than $195, is $52.50 a month.
Oh, my gosh.
And those folks might... And that's with 5% down.
That's 5%
down? That's 5% down.
Wow.
And those folks might have listened to the experts say, wait until you can put more money down for the sake of $52.50 a month.
Right. That doesn't make sense.
So it's that kind of thing when I'm talking with the incoming call. I want to know what their perspective is, because half of our job, you know, three quarters of our job is listening. Just trying to figure out what it is you're trying to accomplish and then trying to find the appropriate vehicle to help them get down to that goal. And we talk about what do you have available in assets. That's a, if there's any single factor that has kept people from buying in all of my 50 years doing this, it's the cash to close. It's terribly difficult to save money. So you want to hoard it. You want to make sure that you apply it the way you really want to apply it. So helping, once I know where that is, it helps me direct the product into FHA, the 3.5% down. If they're a first-time buyer, conventional will allow 3% down.
Yeah.
Which is really good.
Yes.
And then there are, based upon the... down payment assistance programs that may be available, sometimes that fits. The Florida Housing has a lot of down payment products. A lot of people have heard of Hometown Heroes.
Right.
They're out of money right now, but we're anticipating they're going to get more. But again, it's helping with that singular challenge that we keep running into, and that's the cash to close.
Yeah.
So when the call, the phone call comes in, I'm really just trying to identify a direction. And when they're calling in, or they're going to call in, they're going to purchase in 5 or 6 months. Then we can talk about preparing for that. And it's always good, even at that juncture, to run credit.
Mm-hmm.
The credit report details the kind of things we're going to be looking at down the road. And sometimes, if they want, we will see things that allow them to improve their score.
Mm-hmm. Now, running it does not ding them.
It does.
It does ding
the
them?
The kind of ding that we're talking, we call it a consumer-generated request for credit. And okay. It's a ding. And if you, this mortgage credit report was created in the mid-90s by a company called the Fair Isaac Company.
Okay.
If you strip away the words, that's FICO. And right. They ended up selling versions of it. They saw, Experian has a FICO product. TransUnion has a FICO 2 product. And then Equifax came along, and they saw that these people were making money doing credit reports, so they created the Beacon Score. So whenever we're running credit, we pull a tri-merge report that shows all three, shows mm-hmm. all of the detail. But if you Google FICO and it says, how much would a hit be? Right. It's going to say between 5 and 8 points.
Okay.
What's interesting is, along with the request for credit goes an identifying code, which identifies the requester as a mortgage lender. So you could have 50 lenders pull that over the next week, and the scores would all be the same.
They
don't want people to be shoehorned into the first lender that they're free to go. So I always make sure people know that. But then the recovery, it may take 2 months, 3 months for that 5 to 8 point hit to actually recover back to where it was. So it's not a...
No.
I think it's important because it shows everything that's there.
Yeah.
And when we look at... I'm just yakking away here.
No. This is very important information.
If you look at the pie graph of what impacts a credit score, 35% of it is payment history, and it should be a mm-hmm. major component, how you've made your payments in the past. 30% is what they call utilization of credit, and that simply means they're measuring how much of your available credit have you taken advantage of. If you have a $1,000 line of credit on your Visa card, mm-hmm. if you owe $500, that's a 50% credit utilization.
Mm-hmm.
If you read what they would have to say at the repositories, anything over 30 begins to lower the score.
Okay.
So if somebody just keeps it at 30%, that is the max. If when they run the report, they're at 75%, mm-hmm. that score is going to reflect a lowered score because the utilization of credit is higher. So if we're talking with somebody 6 months out and they're wondering how to apply any funds that they have, if they're talking, hey, I want to improve my credit score, by running it that far out, I can advise them, well, I don't want you to pay this off. There's no need. And a lot of people would immediately react, let me pay that off.
Exactly.
Well, you don't need to pay it off. Let's just take it down to 30 or 35% of the balance. So you're going to see virtually all of the benefit that you would get if you paid it off. It's not making any, you don't have to spend that money to do that. So it allows us when we do it early on to advise. When it comes to the cash to close, some people, we're going to look at, when we actually do the application, we're going to look at the last two bank statements.
Okay.
And we're going to look for any non-payroll deposits because they want to know if somebody's borrowed money. Mm-hmm. Where is this money coming from? Any non-payroll deposit has to be explained, and it has to be a good explanation. I have actually had situations where it was cash on hand. It was living in Florida, there's a lot of folks who grew up in this state who put money in the top drawer just in case a hurricane comes by and they can't get to the ATM. Very common. Well, unfortunately, the investors hate that. Fannie Mae says you can't do cash on hand. There's one product that they allow that with. So knowing that if they have the money that's in their top drawer and I'm talking to them 6 months before they want to buy, please go put that money in the bank.
Right.
Just go put the money in the bank. That way, when we look at your last two bank statements, we don't have an issue with trying to explain it. It's completely legit, but it preemptively solves what could be a challenge down the road. I love it when people get involved with it early, because when we can talk about those kinds of things and try to make it as smooth as possible when they finally decide to pull the trigger.
Mm-hmm.
And by the and then we can just re-pull the credit down the road. And those things that they may have done to improve that score, we can see the benefit of.
Okay. And then do they get dinged when you pull it again in the future?
Yes, ma'am.
So
we're recovered, and then you get your 5 to 8 points again.
Okay, yeah, that's what I was wondering. Yeah. So.
And I don't know. I'm saying 5 to 8 because I want it to be verifiable if somebody's looking. I honestly don't think it's that high.
Okay.
I truly don't, but...
But
that's what I
want to be conservative about it.
That's it. That's
and I
me.
Appreciate that. So
that's it.
Yes.
So then we have the folks who they've just been out to see an open house. And those are the ones where I never shortcut the explanations, because I think people need to understand they're borrowing a lot of money.
Yeah.
And I think it's important that they understand all these things, but we move right into the pre-qual process, and within an hour, we can get their pre-qualification, and they can have the letter to provide the realtor, because we both know no seller is going to take their home off the market if they don't think the buyer has talked to a lender and can afford it.
Of course.
So we can move very, very quickly, but even in those situations, I can't shortcut talking about those things are going to impact them through the process.
Yep. So getting back, I think we were talking about dinging the score, I asked.
Yes.
And then, but before that, we had said something, you were still talking about 3%.
3% down for a first-time buyer.
Right.
For conventional financing.
Right, right.
$756,050, I think, is our number now.
Which is amazing.
It is.
Yes.
And there are a lot of folks taking advantage of that. Now, the PMI, the private mortgage insurance, which instead of being federal, like FHA, mm-hmm. it's just a private company. And I was mentioning MGIC was the first one in 1957. Mm-hmm. We use 6. So when I'm actually looking at our pricing on any loan at any given time, there's a little button and an MI button, and I can hit that button. The ratios have flowed through and populated, and I can look at 6 different prices.
Wow.
And these are 6 different companies who measure risk differently, but it goes lowest to high. So we can actually select the least costly of the PMI that's available over a range of 6 different companies. Which is, again, another way of trying to lower that monthly payment that they're going to have. Now, they are going to keep, PMI is the mortgage insurance that you get with FHA. It's 0.5% per year. So you take the loan amount, multiply it times 0.5%, divide by 12, there's your number. And it's there forever.
Okay.
Never goes away.
And can you prepay?
Regardless of prepaying.
Okay. All right, so FHA.
FHA, it is
no
what
prepay.
It is. If you're putting 10% down or more on an FHA loan, it's only for 11 years.
Okay.
But other than that, the normal standard minimum down life of the loan.
Right, and most people who do FHA only do 3.5% down because that is the advantage.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Once in a blue moon, there's some odd thing about FHA, but it's 3.5% down. That's the whole value of it.
Right.
PMI, on the other hand, is it can be dropped. Now, when you go to closing, there's a document you sign that basically says, hey, you can make a call to the servicing lender and ask them to drop it when you get to 80% of the original value.
Okay.
These are kind of some odd rules. But
okay.
The law states that if once a loan is paid down to 78% of the original value, the lender must drop it, period.
Okay.
Even if the property value is declined.
Oh.
But then there's the agencies. We're talking about Fannie Mae, government-sponsored enterprise, along with Freddie Mac, Federal Home Loan Mortgage Corporation, the other GSE. They have a policy, and that policy is if after 2 years you can establish that there's a 75% loan-to-value, it'll drop.
Okay.
You have to request it, and it's the then-current value, by the way.
Okay.
75% of the then current. So now we have a property that's escalating.
Exactly.
And a loan balance that's falling. And once you can establish 25% equity, after 2 years, you can request that it go away.
Okay.
After 5 years, only 20% equity is necessary. Again, based upon the then current value in five.
Right.
So I have, again, I'll write a little program and say, if it's going up this high and the loan balance is going down, and typically after 4 years, in a normal 3 to 3.5% appreciation rate,
right,
you can make the call.
Yep. Well, let's talk about the appreciation rate, because that's something that I touch on with potential buyers. I always say, you know, I know you want to wait now, but the house is going to appreciate, let's say 3.5% year over year, which is conservative, and some properties
go
way more than that, and especially in certain areas of town. So they want to wait to save up. Let's say they're even saving up 10%.
Sure.
You know, I try to advise them, you could do 3%, 5%, whatever. And
get your foot in the door.
Get your foot in the door, because what you can afford today may not be what you can afford tomorrow, and you will have already purchased it.
You know, the odd thing is that people will say, I'm waiting for rates to go down.
Yeah, no, that's...
And they seem to ignore the linkage between the rate going down, a lot more people wanting the house, driving up the price.
Mm-hmm.
So they haven't... I understand we'd all like a lower rate, okay? Whatever the rate is, wouldn't it be nice to have lower?
Sure.
But they haven't yet put the string through the popcorn to realize that they are not, this doesn't make sense.
Right.
We're not going to know where those rates are going to be. And the only better time to buy than today is yesterday.
Yep.
That's...
You always say that, and I love that. Oh, it's true.
When you see it year after year, and you hear the doom and gloom, and the sky is falling, well, real estate seems to be the only safe haven in all of this.
Yes.
And especially in our market, we have it's unique. We're this, Gainesville has such a pent-up demand.
Oh, yes.
And such a limited supply.
Mm-hmm.
That it's, I have no idea how long it will take if it's possible to actually meet the supply. And as long as you have that kind of supply and demand, those prices are going to continue to rise in any environment.
Exactly. Yep. Yep. We are especially low on supply in, you know, the 300 to 500, you know, range of something that's move-in ready.
Yeah.
And, you know, that
it
means
hits the market and.
Yeah.
3 days later.
Yeah, it's gone. It's gone. Or it's just not even popping up.
Oh.
It's just not there. Yeah. I check MLS several times a day. Yeah. Several times a day. I'm always refreshing it. And
as
these
are
things
probably
aren't
there's
coming
probably
up.
Several potential buyers are out there doing the very same thing.
Oh, of course they are. Yeah.
So everybody's trying to get a limited supply, and that's just gonna keep values continuing to rise.
Exactly. So. Exactly. And which is, again, why I always advise them, first of all, to talk to a lender. And you're one of the lenders I tell them to talk to, because you're a wealth of information.
I can talk them to death.
You can. Well, and that's okay, though.
I just want them to know what's going on.
Especially a first-time buyer, I think it's really important to be super informed. And there's only so much you can get off the internet. and some of it's going to be wrong, you know, and there's only so much you can get from your family members who are trying to advise you.
And it changes. There are certain constants in it that always have been there, but the different programs to be current, talking to any local qualified loan officer is far more valuable than doing any kind of online.
Yes.
You're left without an anchor. You're in a system, and you're a number, and there's nobody to call and be responsive to address, well, what about the homeowner's insurance here?
Exactly.
They just have all sorts of questions, which you're not going to get in an online situation.
So. Exactly. Well, you know, I've heard sometimes people in online, when they've been qualified by an online lender or whatever, and they are asking about things, or they're factoring things like insurance, and they're like, well, you're in Florida, so your insurance is blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, wait, it's probably not that high. Uh-huh. We are in Gainesville, so we're a little bit...
And we're a little different than South Florida when it comes to closing costs.
Exactly.
Down there, owner's title is paid by the buyer.
Right.
Up here, it's common and customary for the seller to pay it.
Exactly.
So a lot of the folks who are coming in from out of state, when I have a referral to do a loan, I had one the other day in Kentucky.
Mm-hmm.
And I got on the phone with title company in Kentucky to nail down what those things were going to be,
mm-hmm.
and what those oddities, what those special things, because that's not my primary market. But I don't think that that's often done with the online things. They're just accessing some service, which is supposedly providing smart fees for every state, and they don't really understand. And I've actually seen people decide not to buy because the closing costs that are being presented to them are $3,000 higher than actual.
Exactly.
I mean, isn't that a scary thing? Simply because they're not knowledgeable about the local situation. The realtor, I'm working with a young couple who did a for sale by owner. At least three of my last emails said, this is what a realtor would have been able to help you with.
Right.
In just all sorts of areas. You need knowledgeable representation, whether it's lending, whether it's real estate. You need somebody there that you can trust and be advised by.
Yeah.
Because this is not something people do very often.
Exactly.
And there's going to be concepts that arise that I don't care how smart you are, you cannot, it's not your wheelhouse. So
yeah.
It's your wheelhouse.
And your wheelhouse, yeah. So, I mean, we do it, hundreds of times.
Yeah, it's not self-serving to say that. It is essential that people use a professional who knows the local.
Yes.
Because everything is local.
Exactly. That's why I recommend local lenders, because they will understand the nuances of, like, if you can get a USDA loan in a certain neighborhood that someone may not realize that you can, and then you can get, 100% financing.
Yep.
And there you go. And there's a neighborhood here in town, I believe it's Garrison Way, where you can get it.
Well, Garrison Way is on Tower.
It's on Tower. Can you get a USDA?
I think you have to go over Archer Road
before it's available.
But there are some really nice homes.
Mm-hmm.
And what's interesting is that USDA is based upon census tracts.
Mm-hmm.
But depending upon when the last 10-year census was done, sometimes you have some really nice development going on in between the 10-year census, and they're able to take advantage of that particular loan product. I think Garrison, I will check it out and find out.
Well, actually, Garrison Way, I'm mistaken. Garrison Way it qualifies for a different type of loan because it's near an area that is a little bit more distressed.
Okay.
I guess.
I understand.
And
there are those kinds of census tracts also where Fannie Mae Home Ready Loan has different maximum incomes based upon the census tract within which the subject property lies. That may be that. It. And where you have emerging neighborhoods, where you have neighborhoods in transition, that can happen a lot. Where it has been lower income, and it's identified by Fannie Mae as one of those tracts where they want to increase home ownership and do everything they can. So they have different kinds of rules. But you can, within that census tract, have some very nice homes already that then they can take advantage of. And again, that's the local knowledge
of
those kinds of opportunities.
And that's what I'm, you know, that's what I'm saying. It's like you would know that versus, you know, national, you know, online kind of lender.
That would not be something that would jump out at them by any stretch. And even there, I doubt that their automation looks for that kind of a thing unless somebody's specifically addressing the home ready process.
Yep. So there you go. So what other things have we not touched on in terms of... Let's see. Did you want to do a scenario? Did you want
to... I just wanted to have the numbers here.
Right.
But I already used them.
Okay, perfect. That's good. I mean, I love that example. I love the example of
it's incredibly less expensive for that PMI. Now, the reverse is true. If you... The lower credit scores... I was saying that for years there'd been a particular norm for 5% down, and these people had a 764, or actually a 780 credit score. So they really had all the benefit of the great credit. They did reverse that on the other end. So if you're in the 640, 660, 680 range, it's actually more expensive now for that than it was. Okay. That's when we go FHA.
Got it.
FHA, while it has... this mandatory 0.50% per year that you have to pay forever, the interest rates often start a 0.5% below conventional. FHA loans are full faith and credit. It's the U.S. government has insured these. So they are placed in a different commodity, and we can see a 0.5% lower rate. So I walk people through this. It all depends on how long are you planning on living there. If I'm looking at the aggregate cost of an FHA loan with the added mandatory versus a conventional loan with the PMI, even after the PMI drops, if I'm trying to compare those, it helps me direct the buyer toward what would make most economic sense. At this juncture, there's no write-off any different for mortgage insurance. So if the net is lower for the product that has the mandatory mortgage insurance, who cares?
Yeah.
You know, it's, and very often FHA is so, I'm going to use the word liberal. I think of FHA as the nation's lender. They really go out of their way to try to find a way. Their ratios that they allow are higher. And all of these, when we've gathered the information and the credit report, it's in an electronic format. Well, that electronic credit report automatically populates the liability section of the application. We add in there, where do they work? What do they earn? Where are their assets, where do they bank, how much do they have? And then we ask a few other questions. But once we've gathered that information, we hit a button and it's automatically transmitted into decisioning software. And that software will render a finding. And that finding that we're hoping for is accept eligible or approve eligible. And that is where we can issue the pre-qualification letter. And interestingly, it is that document that every underwriter uses as the basis for them, their wet signature. They're going to use that because it will say approve eligible at the top, and then it'll say collect 2 years W-2s, collect last 2 months bank statements. It'll give the underwriter the exact things that they need now to check in terms of documentation. But it is once I hit the button, 30 seconds.
That's great. That's amazing.
And the finding comes out. But it allows us to pre-qualify. We don't put in a property address. We put in a zip code. We can put in any sale price. I have added a bank. It says To Be Saved Bank. It's the name of it, To Be Saved. Because I'm not, it's not an application. It's a submission without a property address. And that's one of the critical factors to actually call it an application. So just having the zip code so I can create scenarios where we actually find out where it stops saying approve eligible and begins saying refer.
Oh.
And it can be within a 49.98 could see receive the approve eligible, and the 50.01 says refer. We can fine line it that much. Now, all of this is based on an estimate of taxes and insurance and those kinds of things, and we do our very best to ballpark those.
Mm-hmm.
But it really is a very reliable pre-house shopping thing to do. Because then there's just something about knowing that you've got this in your hand, and it's an awful lot more fun.
Well, yeah. I mean, it's a security blanket.
It is. And,
you know,
you know you're not walking into something that you can't afford.
Right. So. It's that has to be so disheartening to go into a place, fall in love with it, and then realize, this is not for me, unfortunately.
Yeah, that's the worst when somebody is ill-advised and they... The other constant question, because what's interesting is that when I'm working with a first-time buyer, part of my job is validating their decision.
Okay, yeah.
I don't have that with move-up. They already know the value of buying the house, but it's interesting that everybody wants validation, especially about a decision this big.
Sure, and especially if you're a first-timer.
Oh, my gosh, am I making a mistake? Should I wait? Where do you think, and obviously, everyone, where do you think rates are going? Should I wait? No.
Right.
No one knows where the rates are going. A year ago, I sat down with you, and I had just listened to the most detailed two-hour presentation by a guru in the industry who was absolutely note certain that we would have 5.5 interest rates last June.
Yeah.
And it didn't matter how logical it was, and it didn't matter how much he based this on facts and graphs and whatnot. Didn't happen. We are in a completely uncontrolled environment when it comes to that. The Fed is absolutely determined to take inflation down to this 2% level.
Yep. And it's not happening.
Oh, my gosh. Well, they're reacting just this last 2 weeks.
Yeah.
We've seen a severe reaction just to two reports, the employment report and the inflation report. And it's basically set us back. And now I think that last I heard the other day, 93% of the experts believe that the Fed will not cut until summer, if they then cut.
Yeah. Wow.
But the loss will be for people to wait, thinking that this is going to gain them. You can refinance.
Sure.
That property is going to continue to escalate. The value is going to continue to go up. It's inescapable. The best thing to do is grab while you can.
Indeed.
And if the rates go down to this fantasy land of 4%, just refinance.
Yes.
If it gets down to 5, refinance then.
Sure.
But get the home now.
Exactly. Well, here's what's going to happen. So if they wait until the summer, and it doesn't happen in the summer, but let's say something might happen in the summer. They won't have any houses to buy at that point because they're all being listed, or not all being listed, but the majority of the houses that they may want to buy are going to be listed in the springtime. And so there will be zero inventory. Prices will continue to appreciate.
Exactly right.
And the rates may go up again by the time they find something else. So
someone is out there buying these houses.
Mm-hmm.
They're staying on the market a very, very short period of time.
Exactly.
What do they know that I don't know?
Exactly.
You know, I keep thinking, if it's raining outside, I guess it's possible for me to walk in the rain and not have a drop fall on me. But the likelihood is, if it's going to appreciate for them, it's going to appreciate for me. There's just a reality to this. Mm-hmm. Waiting for rates to fall makes no sense to me.
No, yeah.
Wanting them to makes all the sense in the world.
Well, sure.
But
we'd all love
waiting
that.
For this, there's always one more wait. This is why I love to talk to the folks early on, because I can help them try to gain a perspective on it. If you're comfortable with the payment, pull the trigger.
Exactly. That's what I tell them. I'm like, if you can afford it, do it.
Yeah.
Then
worry about the other stuff.
Yeah.
Down the way. If there is some precipitous drop during the processing of a loan, and I mean precipitous, most every lender has built into their, they realize that if the rates dropped a 0.5% during the processing period, that they really need to make an accommodation. If not, the people will say, we're going to go to another lender.
Right.
And lenders are in the business to make money. So they have built into their structure the ability to, if that happens, find a way to accommodate, which they don't have to, but they do it because they're realists.
Sure, yeah.
On the other hand, my young couple who locked the night before the employment thing, the rates are 0.75% higher than they were from then. Now they have begun to come back down, but if they had not pulled the trigger based on being comfortable with the payment, they would have been looking at a higher rate.
Yeah.
But those are beginning now to moderate. We're hopeful that tomorrow with the PPI report, we're going to see that improve. We'll see.
That's the thing. We'll see. But what we know for a fact is that houses
are appreciating.
If you're
happy with the payment, simply purchase the home.
Exactly.
If you don't, somebody else is, and you're going to wish you had.
Yep. Definitely. Yep. Well, that's what someone told me, because we've been looking year and a half, I think we've been looking.
And how much of the price has gone up in that year?
Oh, so much. And
that is sad.
It's very sad.
That is so common.
Yes. No, I know. And he told me, he says, oh, I should have bought that second house we saw, but I was afraid to pull the trigger then.
There is a, everybody wants to, we have to rationalize every decision we make, whether we're buying a can of tuna fish, whatever we're buying, a computer, a house. Everybody wants to rationalize it. But honestly, people can overthink this. And what is that? They're
analysis paralysis.
Bingo.
Yeah.
That's exactly the phrase. And if the first house you see, you might want to see a second one just to validate the first house. I want the first house.
Exactly.
Then you don't need to see 50.
Exactly.
Because if you thought it was the perfect house, an hour after you left, somebody else went in.
Exactly.
It is simply the nature of the beast.
Yeah.
And it is terribly difficult to, I'm not saying it's easy to do, but you have to pull the trigger when you know it's the right thing.
Exactly.
And not overthink it.
I just tell people, when you walk in, you're going to know whether or not you're in love with it. It's going to give you a feeling.
That's it.
And if you can afford it, get it.
That's it. And don't look back.
Right.
I mean, second guessing yourself, just enjoy the decision that you made.
Yes.
So, every situation is unique. I had a call from a young lady who had been incarcerated. Three kids. She now has a really good job.
Good.
And very concerned about her past.
Mm.
And I said, let's run the credit report and see what it says. Her credit score was 700.
Wow.
There was no mention of anything having to do with her past situation, and she was able to buy.
That's great.
But it took her a lot to pick up the phone. I think that no one wants to be sold. All of us want a trusted advisor.
Yes.
And when people are, I spend most of the time at the beginning of my discussions with folks just helping them know me as well as I know them. That way they can know that we're just normal folks trying to help normal folks. Nobody's trying to sell them anything. Sales isn't about selling people anything. It's all about helping them make a decision. And just spending some time listening, most importantly, and then trying to figure out through what you hear how best to give them information. Some people internalize it. Some people are very engineering types, and they are very facts and figures. It's funny. I always talk about realtors. Some people try to sell the BTUs of the furnace. Mm-hmm. A great realtor sells the warmth of the family room.
Yeah.
And the conversations that we have with especially first-time buyers, much of it, I think, is getting them over this reticence to be judged. And for them, they just need to know that the person on the other end of the phone isn't judging them at all. Yeah. It's just a matter of helping them achieve something. And once they get there, it's a lot easier to help them come to that decision, mm-hmm. to buy, to wait, to whatnot. And I've had people, it's going to take 2 years for this particular thing. Because you're self-employed, and what we have to do, we're required to evaluate self-employed borrowers differently.
Sure, yeah. That makes sense.
If you're selling snow cones at Crescent Beach, and we're only taking June to Labor Day,
right?
That's not a fair assessment of what your income is. So we have to look at... So there are times when I have to counsel someone... I can't help you. Probably more often than not, it's credit issues. What can we do to bring up that credit? And I don't believe in credit. I'm somebody who fixes credit. I don't think I've ever embraced that's possible.
Credit sorcery.
Yes.
Yes.
But
not a thing.
But I try to help people understand that how to go forward quickly and build it positively. Just in terms of how you treat your accounts and what accounts you might open or whatnot. But a lot of the discussions have nothing to do with pre-qualifying them right now. It has to do with trying to help them find a path so that in a year, and patience is on short supply in all of us.
Well, yeah.
But it's really gratifying when you're talking with somebody. And I will say, please call me in 3 months. I'd really love to hear how you're doing.
Yeah.
And then they'll call. And then I'll say, please call me in 3 months. Like to hear how you're doing. Encouragement is the greatest gift I think it is possible in life. Just encouraging people. So if I can help them realize milestones. And so many times, it's just, you're doing everything right. You're doing everything right. I just needed to do this a little bit longer, and you're home free.
Yeah.
So it's...
You're home.
Yeah, you'll have that home.
Yeah.
And that's, that's the joy of the job. But each person each individual is going to be unique. There are unique programs out there for first-time buyers, but really they come down to trying to minimize the down payment. Mm-hmm. The rest of it in terms of income and credit, those are pretty constant. So it's just a matter of trying to be a resource.
Yeah. Well, I think what we've learned here is that lenders aren't judging you. Realtors aren't judging you.
Correct.
We want you to have a home, and we want you to ask, because you never know when you can afford something, whether it's because you can put less down and pay PMI, or because you have a better credit score than you think you have, or you know, whether you can buy now and not later because houses are going to appreciate in value.
Yep.
Or if you might have to wait a little bit, but that's okay. That's what counselors are for.
Yep.
Is to guide you there to get the, you know, the thing when the time is right. So
that's
yeah.
It.
Yep. So that's my summary. That's yes, what my, those are my takeaways.
No, that's yeah. On the nose.
All right. Perfect. Nose. Well, Dan, thank you so much You're for welcome. Joining us. You are always so informative and great. And you say you learn from me, but I don't know
Absolutely.
How because I learn from you all the time. In fact, I was talking to my husband before coming over here and I said, I've got Dan on the podcast today. So I'm going to learn all. I'm going to listen to information about PMI and I'm going to learn so much stuff. And
well, actually,
I love it.
I listen to all your podcasts.
Thank
I follow you.
You
on Facebook and there is, and it's nice seeing the personal pictures and you and your family. But you often are putting on Facebook really informative things that are so helpful.
Well,
and
thank you.
I appreciate the way you do that. It's
thank
unique.
You.
I told my daughter, who is, that you really represent just the finest in how you approach social media in terms of an informative way, both for your sellers. I mean, the listings that you do. I mean, good grief. And your assistant who helps you with all the media,
she's
fabulous.
Because
she's the best. These things look like it came out of Hollywood. It really is. Really
I know,
neat.
I know.
And
she's...
the Wine Wednesdays, I really appreciate them.
Wine Wednesdays, not as produced, but definitely they come from the heart and
Understood.
The glass. So
yeah, no, I get it.
Yeah. Well, thank you, Dan.
You're
that's
welcome.
That's a huge compliment. So I appreciate that very, very much. So, all right. Well. Thank you again. I look forward to having you on the podcast again, maybe in a few months.
And we'll talk about rates again.
We'll talk about rates. Who knows what's happened here
sure.
by then. So,
yep.
Yeah. All right. Well, thank you, everybody, for joining us. And here's to the next one. Thanks so much for listening today. If you like what you hear and want to learn more about real estate and hear the occasional funny story, then hit that subscribe button right now. And if you know of someone who'd benefit from listening, then tell them to subscribe too, or else they may feel a little left out. For questions, topic suggestions, or nice comments, send an email to anna@segwayre.com. We can also connect on Facebook at SegwayRE. Thanks for listening as we bring you a new way of doing real estate. Bye!